Was there any part of you walking up the floor like, I can't believe this is happening again?
Nope. I got to figure out a way. And the crazy part is, I don't got too much to do. We're going to do it as a unit every single time. And we're going to be in this thing together. I know that for a fact. You know, when we huddle up after the game, after a tough loss like this one, you know, everybody's smiling because we know we're very capable of it. I'm telling you, and we're not going to let up. I'm not going to let anybody quit. I'm not going to let our guys quit. I don't give a damn what happens. We're going to go in there. We're going to win.
8:03 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. That voice you heard coming back from break, that was Jimmy Buckets. Jimmy Butler following not one, not two, but three consecutive losses to the Boston Celtics in the NBA's Eastern Conference Final. Mo DeKeel is going to join us, Bleacher Report, The Athletic, in just a second here to talk more about tonight's massive Game 7. Before we get to Mo, I need to tell you that Halford and Bruff in the morning, Hour 3 is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com. today.
We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find a perfect fit at kintec.net.
To the phone lines we go. Mo DeKeel now, Bleacher Report, The Athletic, here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Mo. How are you?
I'm doing well. About yourselves?
We're good. We're excited for tonight. I imagine everybody is, except maybe certain members of the Miami Heat who might just be riddled with anxiety. How much pressure, how much anxiety do you think there is facing this Miami Heat team going into tonight's Game 7?
I think there's a ton of pressure. Obviously, being the first team to give up a 3-0 lead in the NBA carries a little bit of a historical context and something you don't want to be the one. You don't want to be the one of 150, you know, and I think that's the pressure there a little bit. But we should be honest also. It's a Game 7 to go to the NBA Finals. Everybody, both teams, immense pressure. The stress levels are high. The mistakes are going to be magnified. Like, that's the pressure of a Game 7 game. And this one, to go to the Finals, and for the second year in a row between these two teams, I mean – yeah, there's a little bit more pressure on Miami just because of the historical context. But I can't imagine it's that much more than just having an opportunity to go to the finals and possibly blowing it.
The Derek White putback in Game 6. So just to put this thing into context, the second player in NBA history, to hit a buzzer beater with his team trailing and facing elimination. The only other guy to do that was Michael Jordan in 1989 with the shot over Craig Elo and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I don't remember that one. Yeah. Was that important?
Yeah, so two fairly iconic shots now we're talking about here. Walk us through what happened here, because I know you did several breakdowns on this. I read your Twitter timeline in the aftermath. You really kind of encapsulated the thing and got the essence of the thing is just how big, just how impressive, just how unlikely Derek White's shot was.
I mean, you have to understand, this was probably the perfect number of events to work out for Derek White to get this bucket. And by the way, I've often compared Derek White to Michael Jordan. I don't know what anybody else is talking
about. Most people have.
But I think there was a lot of things. I think one, Eric Spoelstra made a tactical mistake in not putting Max Strus on the ball, defending Derek White on the inbounder. Instead, he chose to have him deny Jason Tatum as he was coming up to get the ball, which makes sense. You don't want Tatum to get it with 3 seconds. You're a little bit concerned. But when you do that, you take the pressure off Derek White on inbounding the ball. He knows he can't go to Jason Tatum. He's going to have a clear line of sight to make the next pass, which happened to be to Marcus Smart, who squeezed out, and that was tough. And you know, he turned around and got a quick shot off because he knew from memory in the Philadelphia series that he missed a game winner because he didn't get the shot off in time. And because of that, and because Max Strus was not on the ball and without denying Jason Tatum, Derek White had a free run to the court, to the rim. And he even spaced out at first to three. I mean, Marcus Smart could have kicked it to him, and he could have gotten a wide-open three himself. Instead, Smart shot it, and we have to talk about that miss because you couldn't have asked for a better miss That ball rolled around and then popped out right in front of Derek White, who was crashing. And if, I mean, just imagine this way. If it rolls around the rim for half a tenth of a second, that shot's no good. Like, it doesn't, I mean, it's all the little things that had to go right for the Boston Celtics to pull this off and for Miami to now be faced with game seven.
What did you think of the way the Celtics managed the lead when they had it in the fourth quarter?
Oh God, it was so bad.
So bad.
I mean, but it was, we've seen this before from them. We saw it in game seven last year. They were up 13 with 4.5 minutes left. And they gave that away. We were a Jimmy Butler three away from the Miami Heat going to the finals last year. I mean, that's kind of the almost the MO of the Celtics down the stretch. They have not been good. I've heard people say if it's a close game, Boston's going to lose. Granted, they pulled this one out. But this one was another terrible one. Like, yeah, everybody's excited about the win. But you're also looking at it going like, man, we blew a 10-point lead in 3 minutes, guys. Like, we need to have a discussion here. You know, like, our season almost ended in a horrific collapse. I think, you know, that's the kind of stuff there. Like, they got to get much better, whether it's in Game 7 or even the finals, and figuring out how to close games.
I, like many people through the first three games of this series, was highly critical of the work, or lack thereof, that Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla was doing. And, you know, I got some stick from some of our listeners who texted in. One of them actually decided to track me down on Twitter so he could continue the bat. After game six, he's like, what do you think of Joe Mazzulla now? I got to ask the question, has he done enough now in reversing this series to reverse the narrative that he was in over his head and maybe not ready for this?
I mean, I don't know if we could ever just say he fully reversed the narrative. He's done a great job these last three games. But let's just be honest. If they lost game six, we would have been, how do you blow this lead? We would have gone right back to it, right? Like, how do you blow these leads? And, you know, you had this opportunity, you blew it. My thing was, I felt like the blame was always unfairly placed on Mazzulla when they were down 3-0. Not that I thought Mazzulla did a good job. A lot of issues with the way he coached over those first three games. But I also felt like Jason Tatum played terribly. Jaylen Brown's played terribly. It wasn't all coaching mistakes. It was mistakes that the Celtics have had under Ime Udoka, under Brad Stevens. Like, these are problems that have consistently been an issue for Boston. And I felt like it was unfair to now just put it on Joe, who was also handed this job 3 days before the training camp began. Like, I don't think people understand. This is an important thing, an important note for people to understand. And I know it sounds like I'm defending Mazzulla, although I'm not a big fan of his. When you're a first-time NBA head coach, Adrian Griffin just got the job with the Bucks. He's his first time as an NBA head coach. He has all these months to prepare for now for the next season. That's 3 or 4 months right now at this point. Joe Mazzulla was handed this job 3 days before training camp began, and he was 3 or 4 months behind all the other first-year NBA head coaches. Difficult position to be in. And I feel like in that sense, you know, he deserved another run this coming season to at least have a full off season. And I think he's going to get it.
Do the Heat need a legacy game from Jimmy Butler to win tonight?
They need a legacy game from him, but they need an aggressive Bam Adebayo. He needs to live up to the nickname Bam. Okay. If he's going to be Bam, he needs to go Bam. And I think that's kind of the deal there. They're going to need a legacy game from him. I mean, let's just be honest. They had a terrible game for Jimmy Butler and almost pulled this one out. And that was because their role players all stepped up and played phenomenally well. The question is, can they do that again? I'm not sure if they can do that game seven in Boston, but that's why they're going to need Jimmy Butler to step up in a way of which I don't know if he has the legs for. And they're going to need Bam Adebayo to step up and be extremely aggressive in this game. This game's their season right now.
When you say he doesn't have the legs for it, is he just tired from the playoff run, you think, or 33 years old?
Both, and not even just the playoff run, the lead up to the playoffs. You know, Spo has said this in press conferences, man, we felt like we've been playing the playoffs, you know, since March because they've been trying to make sure they got in, you know, and let's just be honest, right? After they got destroyed by Atlanta in the first play-in game and were down in the fourth quarter against the Chicago Bulls, I was making trades for Jimmy Butler. Like, I mean, this was a team that was barely, you know, making it into the playoffs. I just think all of that has taken its toll. And you could see it you could see it in Jimmy's shot and everything he did. In game six, he had a play early in the first quarter where he got a dunk. And I'm telling you, he barely got the ball over the rim. Like, it was just it was an old man dunk. And that's saying something. I mean, I know it's rude for me considering I can't dunk. But if I did that one, trust me, I'd be running around the world. The whole world would have known. But for Jimmy, I mean, he barely got up. I just think the fatigue mentally and physically has started to take its toll.
So let's set the table for tonight. What's at stake for the Celtics and what's at stake for the Heat?
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. I mean, I know this is going to be a boring answer, but it's just going to the finals. I think, you know, look, if the Heat lose, they're not firing Spoelstra. They're not getting rid of Jimmy Butler. They're not getting rid of Bam Adebayo. They're going to obviously make changes to the roster and try to improve. But I think they're, you know, for them, if they get to the finals, it also kind of validates Heat culture, which everybody's – it's a phrase so many people hate to hear. But I think it validates it. And you sit there and you go like, wow, they really do have something there. And I think it's validated whether they get there or not. I know obviously blowing a 3-0 lead will probably be take a shot to it a little bit. But I think that's kind of on the line for them. For the Celtics, I think this is just kind of completing what they said they were set out to do from the beginning of the season. They wore these shirts. It said unfinished business, all of that stuff. And then, you know, they haven't looked that great in the playoffs from time to time. You know, I've been disappointed with their actual – the way they looked in some of these playoff games, and I've expected better from them. But for them to get to the finals and, you know, pull this one off and pull it in historic fashion, I think you get to take away the comments of them being soft or not tough enough. You know, I think that's a team that's mentally tough and able to do it if they pull this game out.
Mo, who wins tonight?
I think Boston wins. I think it's just – I just don't know – how much juice Jimmy has. And I don't know if it's, I'm not going to be shocked if he doesn't. I'm not going to blame him if he doesn't. Look at what he's done to carry this team so far. And when you look at these rosters, the Celtics just have so much more talent. Just if the Celtics play the right way, they should win this game pretty easily and probably hopefully not blow it in the final few minutes. I mean, I would love nothing more than an incredibly close game because game six was amazing. But just when you look at the rosters and the way these teams should play, you would think the Celtics should be able to win this one. So I'm going to say Boston just because they're at home and they got all the momentum.
Well, this was great, man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to do this. We appreciate it. Enjoy game seven tonight. It should be a good one. We'll do this again when the NBA finals get underway and the Nuggets actually get to play basketball again.
Who are they?
Oh, yeah. Those guys.
Yeah. Thanks, Mo. Appreciate it, dude.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Mo DeKeel from Bleacher Report and The Athletic here on the Halford Brough Show on SportsCenter 650.
I wonder if the Celtics get to the final, if they win tonight, if that will make for a better final anyway. Like, if the Heat get there, I feel like they might just get absolutely blown out, swept by the Nuggets. I feel like the Celtics would have a better chance, but you never know with
Celtics
that.
Celtics are a better team.
Yeah.
They want more talent. They're a better team. They have better players. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just want to look at it, its most rudimentary, elementary analysis, they're a better basketball team. There's a reason that they were the top seed, one of the top seeds in the East. Jason Tatum is probably the best player among the two teams. All due respect to Jimmy Butler. Butler's a little older.
It would make a better storyline in terms of you've got this Denver Nuggets team that's never even been to the NBA Finals, looking for its first championship against one of the most storied teams in franchise history.
It's a good narrative, absolutely. Yeah. Right? We want to talk about the Florida Panthers being off for a while. The Nuggets haven't played a game since May 22nd, so a week
The Nuggets
today.
Have forgotten the rules.
Yeah. Like, I can't even imagine how you flip the switch from you're playing every other night in the playoffs and high-intensity games, too, to you go sit for a week, and they're not even – they got a ways to go still. It's a long time off. I really hope that Russ doesn't become a factor for either team because I think the Panthers and the Nuggets are really compelling in their own unique ways going into the finals, but they're sitting there for a long time.
So just a reminder, get in your What We Learns. Text them into the Dunbar Lumber text line 650-650. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Lander Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. Send in your What We Learns. It could be about the NBA, NHL, Archer's Sea Loves.
Sure.
The hero for Latvia,
We were corrected earlier in the show. I thought he was just named the top goalie at the Worlds. Apparently it was...
You were corrected, not we.
Well, I was corrected in that he was named the top goalie at the Worlds. He was also named the MVP of the Worlds.
I think he was also anointed best prospect in the entire planet. I think I heard that as well.
King of Latvia.
Yeah.
Too.
Wow. And yeah. New number one Canucks goalie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Demko's been traded. We didn't get to that yet.
No, we'll get to that in What We Learned, Humanoid Edition.
Right. Yeah. So send in your What We Learned, text them into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. Halford, you are going to start our version of What We Learned. What did you learn, and is it about soccer?
No, okay. No, it's about hockey. Junior hockey, I might add, with everything else that's been going on over the last 72
hours.
My
bit.
Yeah, well, did you watch any of the Memorial Cup, Greg? Did you watch?
I've seen highlights. I did not watch them live.
So that guy
on the island.
Three games into the Mem Cup, just bizarre score lines. So it opens with...
Yeah, Peterborough's got to tighten it up a bit.
Just a little bit.
Just tighten it up.
Well, you would have said the same thing for Kamloops after the first game. The Blazers, the hosts, open up against Quebec, the Remparts in the first game. 8-3, they get... I can't imagine starting a tournament... worse.
Right.
You're the host.
Mm-hmm. You're a good team. You're not in the tournament just because you're hosting it.
Yeah, they lost in the dub semis, right? To Seattle, the eventual champion. I think that's right. Anyway, point being, Kamloops comes out first game at the Sandman Center. It was rocking. They get the doors blown off them by Quebec. And then Kamloops comes back against the OHL champion, the Peterborough Petes, 10-2. Yesterday. And
how many points does Stankoven have?
The Stankoven had 5 points, if I'm not mistaken.
Good for him.
Yeah, so this tournament, really all over the map. I've been keeping a cursory glance on it because it's obviously local and it's
right.
in Kamloops, and I know that they were really fired up, not just to host, but bringing this particular team with Stankoven into the Stankoven.
Kind of a big week for Gilardi.
No, huge. Huge, 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 huge. He's got the game 6 tonight, obviously. In Dallas, no mm-hmm. less.
What's he attending? Is he in Dallas or is he at the Mem Cup?
It's got to be Dallas, right? It's got to be.
Should we call him up?
You got his number, right? Is A-Dug's.
Text
A-Dug's
him. Text him. You guys are tight. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
A-Dug's working on a business deal too.
We're best buds.
Yeah.
A-Dug's the Blazers don't play again for a couple nights now, so maybe I would not be surprised if he went.
But they're hosting. You feel like he'd want to be there and
part of
the festivities.
He doesn't need to be at the Quebec Peterborough game, or knows who's going to win that. I have no idea how the OHL champs go to a tournament and lose the opener 10-2. That's kind of crazy to me, but I digress.
All right, give us a moo cow on that.
Almost at the rap horns.
I learned today that the fine people of Latvia got the day off today because Latvia beat the Americans 4-3 in overtime.
That's amazing.
Of the bronze medal game. At the World Championships. Yeah, Latvians, I'm going to read the story from Reuters here. Latvians woke up to go to work on Monday morning, only to find they didn't have to. Their parliament had met at midnight to declare a holiday after the national ice hockey team chalked up its best ever result at the World Championship. Yeah, if you see some of the pictures of the celebrations going on in Latvia right now, there are thousands and thousands of people there.
Yep. It's amazing.
Someone replied to a tweet that I had out there that said, the bronze medal celebration is going to be bigger than the Stanley Cup parade this year. And maybe, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
Definitely bigger than the gold celebration.
Nobody's getting a surprise day off regardless of who wins the Stanley Cup this year.
That's true. Yeah.
No one. Like the state governor or whatever isn't going to go in. Hey, we need an emergency meeting. The Panthers won the Stanley Cup last night.
Ask us
Florida,
anything.
You get a day off.
Monday, ask us anything for you guys. Between Vegas, Dallas, and the Panthers, who of the three would have the biggest Stanley Cup parade in terms of attendance?
Vegas.
Vegas, yeah.
Vegas.
You say Vegas?
Yeah. Vegas would be massive.
Vegas would be
Can
massive.
You imagine that down the strip?
It would be pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It would be amazing.
But just as far as fan interaction
Vegas.
And...
That's
Vegas.
A real possibility right now.
They have the most
Vegas.
Fans?
Like that's, yeah, of
you
course.
Say, over
yeah.
Dallas?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think if Vegas... I think Vegas is... God, it's hard to say. Like, is Vegas the favorite to win the Stanley Cup right now? Because I think if they get to the final, they'll be significant favorites.
Last couple games might have put some doubt into that. But,
yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
If they're going
to
be...
But they haven't got to the final yet, right?
I think if... Honestly, I think...
I think it's the Panthers, man.
I don't
have a feeling about
it. He's talking like betting favorites.
Yeah, okay,
not
that's
like
fair. Yeah, I mean, Vegas would probably be the betting favorites, yes, but I would pick Florida. I think they just have that extra gear.
I'm going the other way.
So if Vegas wins tonight, you would still say Florida is the favorite to win the Stanley Cup?
Well, I would pick them. I don't know. They wouldn't be the favorite in betting odds, but I would still pick them to win.
You think Bobrovsky's going to keep it going? And
yeah, I just think they got that. They have that thing. They got that dog in them.
But they don't. Here's Halford hot take time. I think that the time off's going to
kill them. Yeah, I know.
The
that's
kill them.
That
it's
always.
Kill them.
I know. That's
when
a,
I saw Matthew Tkachuk doing interviews on TNT, I was like, that's bad.
Right.
Hockey Mojo. Like, it was good for the sport, and he was great.
Time off is bad for, the first game, though. Like, or even, the first half of the first. Like, they'll get their legs in.
Yeah, A-Dog's right. I mean,
it's
the
not
whole
that.
Rest
that,
versus rust
it's a really
thing
old,
is like,
like
a, it's like a game one thing.
Yeah, like
it's the first period even sometimes.
No,
yeah.
I
may
disagree.
Put that at the disadvantage for a game, sure.
I'm not talking about how their execution on the ice. I'm just talking about, the vibes and the mojo. Like, they
that's fair. That's
they
fair.
They showed up every other night. Mm-hmm. And they just won really close hockey games. They were it wasn't like they were blowing anybody out. I don't think Florida's had one lopsided win this postseason.
Yeah, I don't know if they have either.
Rest can absolutely be a negative factor, but I don't know if it could be a negative factor for a whole series, especially if it goes long.
But it's not rust. This is the good vibes, or they just stopped.
Yeah, no, I get you.
Yeah, there's something about the playoffs. We were on the road covering it. It's just the repetition of it. It's like, okay, now I go home and have a nap, and now I wake up, and now, you just get used to it. Mm. It's just it's not monotony, but even the players acknowledge it. It's like you're just in this cycle of sleep, wake up, eat, hockey, massive game with tons of stress.
That we're going to win.
Sleep, wake up, eat, and that's it. And then you're just basically resting between these moments of pure psychotic intensity because the games are so tightly contested. And then you try and crank out a few hours of tortured sleep.
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. By the way, I was laughing reading this article about the day off in Latvia because I'm going to read a bit more of the article. As dawn broke after the midnight sitting in Parliament,
so good.
There was confusion about who was working and who was not. Court hearings were canceled and schools and universities were closed, but national exams for high school students went ahead with staff paid at holiday rates. Businesses found themselves in some disarray. Here's a quote from the president of the Latvian Chamber of Commerce.
One of my favorite chambers of commerce.
It will be chaos for many. Several hospitals chose to stay open to honor doctor's appointments. Oh, that was nice of them.
Is Artur Cilovs the most powerful man in Latvia?
He is right now.
Right now?
Him and Kasper Dalgavins.
Yeah.
Is he getting his own stamp?
He might get his own stamp.
That is so incredible.
It's great.
It is cool. Yeah.
It is awesome. All right, give us a mukau on all of that. Again, a reminder, text your What We Learns into the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. We'll read them on the other side of the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Get smarter when you listen to Hockey Talk, the Hockey PDO cast with Dmitry Filipovich. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now for my favorite part of the show. Well, that's a talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always death.
Well, we're not going to talk to the audience just yet because Laddie has a What We Learned. You are listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. So before we get to the humanoids, a couple things real quick. One, Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Hour 3 of the program is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. Now, over we go to Greg Ballack, better known as Laddie, who has a What We Learned to share.
Yeah, What We Learned on the weekend. I know how Brough loves the scores of the Vancouver Canadiens games, especially when he goes and attends them.
Yes.
What he hangs on.
He is all about the results.
I feel like this one's worth sharing, though. The Seas won over the weekend 19-2 over Spokane.
Briefly listening to the broadcast on Sportsnet 650. Tyler Zickel on the call, and they had a 13-run inning. Is that correct?
I believe so. Yeah. And yeah, it was just a total shellacking on the weekend by the Canadiens, which I feel like is a noteworthy score. Jason, is that true? Do you agree?
I wouldn't care.
You just having a good
time. They scored 19 runs. That's
awesome. They were on the road. Has anyone been to another Northwest League field?
No.
I think I should go.
I've never been to Yakima.
This one was in Spokane.
I've heard stories of each of them. There's a few duds.
You've heard stories?
Well, there's a few, there's a few big duds.
Yeah,
there's some good ones. So,
which is the good one, though? Is it Salem Kaiser? One of them is very renowned.
I think that's not the good one.
That's not a good one? That's a bad
whatever
one?
Whatever Funko Pop Field, whatever team plays there, I think.
When are we all going to go to the Nat? We got to go.
We got to do a team bonding exercise.
I would actually like to, you know how they have sushi races?
Yes.
We should have dog races.
Well, I was going to say,
A-Dog versus Laddie, and they can wear the sushi costumes.
When it's bring your dog to the park night,
please don't give them ideas.
We should bring our dogs to the park
night. Oh, yeah. Do you already miss dog days? Look up dog days of summer.
Do it!
Look up dog days of summer for Nat Bailey Stadium, and maybe we can make that happen. We can bring our dogs.
I have a Chef Wasabi bobblehead. I would love to dress up as Chef Wasabi. That'd be amazing.
Okay. Mook out while Andy figures out the dog talk.
Let's print out some submissions here. Basketball Phil, what we learned. My high school coach was correct. Always crash the offensive glass to get rebounds. Derek White did, and Max Strus didn't box him out, and now we have a game 7. That's basketball 101. Yeah, there was a lot of good fundamentals at display, especially,
Good fundamentals from Jimmy. Hit your free throws.
Hit
bad
your free throws.
Fundamentals from Max Strus. Got to put a body on a guy. Got to box him out. Mm-hmm. All the old grouchy basketball dudes. Anywhere neighborhood of like 50 years old. Probably high school coaches, right? Got to box out.
Well, the Heat might have cost themselves a trip to the finals because they didn't box out. They thought they had a one.
Well,
did you see that video, by the way, on social media about the Miami Heat fans at the wedding? And it looked to be a Miami Heat-themed wedding. I wasn't quite sure, is this real or not? Nothing I see. So anyway, the story of the video, which I retweeted, if you want to go take a look at it, was there are all these people at a very fancy wedding, and they're all watching the game. And when the shot was missed, but Smart took the shot, right?
Correct.
So it clanked, and then they all celebrated because they thought they won. And it was this huge celebration. Like, there was, like, a Miami Heat flag that started waving, and everyone was celebrating. And it went on and on and on. And the joke is, like, obviously people were, like, making fun of them because the Heat
did not win.
But they kept on celebrating. And I'm watching this. I'm like, is this real? If it is, yikes. That's embarrassing for those people who are at that wedding. But if it isn't, we can fake anything now.
I know. That's the problem.
I couldn't figure it out.
That's the problem with really all social media right now, especially for the jobs that we do. We're like, did you see that thing? And then the other guy's like, I did see that thing. And then the third guy's like, you know, that thing was fake.
Right.
Because deep fakes and AI have completely changed the game. I mean, and we weren't the sharpest tools in the shed to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
We get duped on a regular basis.
Constantly.
But the dupes are getting more and more like savvy and effective.
Yeah.
And now I just don't know what's. So anytime I see a viral video now, you have to ask, was it staged? But now you're like, was it even real? Like, did it get generated somewhere, spliced together a bunch of other videos?
Oh, you can fake voices now, too?
Yeah, well, I saw people freaking out because they're like, hey, we got this deepfake AI conversation between Bill Gates and Socrates. Isn't this awesome? And everyone was just like, no, it's not. Like,
that's terrifying.
Who is asking for this?
Yeah, I don't find any of that content
engaging.
It's
the stupidest stuff
whatsoever.
Like, no, I don't want to see a fake conversation between Socrates and Bill Gates. That is not interesting.
I will say this. You guys follow CBus memes?
Yes.
You send us the clip.
I sent it to you guys, right?
I found that scary, the way they were able to...
So he does one with...
Copy the voices of, what was it, Biden, Trump, and...
Barack Obama. And Justin Trudeau.
And they sound bang on.
Yeah. It's crazy how... I mean, they're hilarious because they're so far-fetched that no one would think that they were real, right? It's like...
We were laughing until the world descended into chaos where nobody knew what was true.
It's like, ha ha. Oh, wait, society.
You guys are going to be replaced by deepfake AI versions of yourselves.
It would not be hard.
No, that would
be
the easiest one.
That'd be like the most basic AI.
Hey, Halford, how about that Canucks game?
Boy, that frustrated me.
Yeah.
By the way, Dog Days of Summer for
Nat Bailey.
It's Tuesday, June 27th versus the Spokane Indians.
Perfect.
Well, clear your calendars.
Bring our dogs.
Hey, the team they just put up 19 against.
Yeah.
Bodes well.
Clear
but
your
you
got to
eat your kibble.
Yeah.
Unsigned, what we learned in a parallel universe. Sports talk in Argentina is mocking Canada, where 500,000 people turned up on Parliament Hill to celebrate the men's team for finishing third in the World Cup.
You could create this alternate reality with AI.
For the record, we were not mocking Latvian fans for celebrating. We think it's awesome.
Yeah, there was no mockery involved. None. Or intended.
None whatsoever.
What Latvia did on the ice was awesome. And the Parliament was like, we need to get together now.
Yeah, a midnight sitting for a day off.
One parliamentarian was like, but it's midnight.
Plus, when you think about the size and scale of Latvia and their history in hockey, like it's a big deal to them. It's way bigger than we could even imagine.
What we got here? Oh, okay. Well, this is Juan from Comox. What we learned. Patrick Waugh is looking a little jolly. He looks like he's going for the Santa look. Yeah, he's got a massive beard.
Yeah.
Massive, and it's very white. Mm-hmm. Very white. I like, I've seen some guys in the playoffs, obviously, like they just let it go, right? They don't even try and groom or trim or maintain. It's just grow. The Joe Thornton, if you will. Patrick Waugh is leaned in there. You just don't see it from coaches very often.
You don't see it from goalies very often because of the mask.
The mask, yeah.
It's difficult having a giant beard like he has right now under a mask.
Unsigned what we learned.
By the way, that's future Columbus Blue Jackets head coach Patrick Waugh.
Do you remember when the initial rumors were that Babcock was going to go to Columbus?
I do. And I think
now it's Patrick Roy.
Well, you know what I think?
I can see them hiring. I feel like Yarmo is not averse to hiring a taskmaster.
Johnny Gaudreau's there.
Johnny's going to be like, hey, awesome.
This guy's yelling a lot at me. I don't like this.
To get away from Sutter. Now he's gone from Calgary.
Well, Gaudreau played under Bob Hartley. And Bob Hartley was as hard-ass as they come, so maybe there's something there. But anyway, I think what happened in Columbus was, I think they floated the old trial balloon out there.
With Babcock?
Yeah. They threw it out for, they're like, let's see how this goes over. Because Babcock is ostracized, but not in terms of like...
Not in the same way as Quenneville.
Not legally, and he doesn't need reinstatement. He's just got a tarnish on him because of the mental head games he played with Snitch Marner, right? So what we're... what we're saying is, can Babcock come back? Yes. Are you willing to go there? I would not be surprised if they sort of floated that out there in that capacity.
I don't know. Maybe. What we learned, we're probably going to get some decisions on coaching and general managers this week. Again, two vacancies in the GM position. Pittsburgh reportedly just waiting on Kyle Dubas to say yes or no. And then Toronto, of course, has to replace Dubas. The consensus seems to be Brad Treliving, but you never know. Matt and Abby, what we learned, according to Rod Brind'Amour, the Miami Heat haven't lost three in a row. They just haven't won them.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I get that, Matt and Abby. That's pretty good. The Heat are in big trouble. And they are probably, not definitely, but probably going to become the first NBA team in NBA history to have a 3-0 series lead and then blow it.
Have you checked the line on that one again? I know when you tweeted me on the weekend, it was 10.5, which I still think was...
I think it's down to 8.
I still think it's crazy that the line was ever 10.5. Maybe Vegas knows what it's doing. Maybe the bookmakers know what they're doing. Or the odds makers, sorry, the bookies, and they got this right. But I felt like for a Game 7 in which Boston's trying to do the improbable, 10 felt like a lot. But then I'm like, maybe the Heat are just done. Maybe they're just mentally fried.
Gunner from Kelowna, what we learned after all the criticism Tyler Myers takes from Canucks fans, it was great to see him win a gold medal for Canada at the Worlds. Gunner is also happy for Milan Lucic, his first medal for Team Canada, and still gives it all, and what a smile after winning. Yeah.
On future Lucic, Canuck, Milan Lucic.
On Lucic, well, I think there is going to be a push to bring in Lucic. There is. I'll be curious to see if the Canucks are at all interested, if they talk to him. He loves playing. He loves hockey. He's been part of successful teams in the past with strong cultures. I don't know if he'd be interested in playing for the Canucks. I don't know if that's something that interests him. But this guy loves the game. He loves sports. His actually personality in terms of like his appreciation for hockey and how much of a hockey nerd he is kind of reminiscent of Burroughs. You know how Burroughs knows like everything, he follows the league and follows other sports. I think he's big into tennis too. Like Luch just loves hockey. And he wanted to be part of this
Team Canada team at the Worlds because he was a late cut in 2010 and 2014 from the Olympics. And I think, you know, that was when Luch was in his prime and was a big part of, first of all, the Boston Bruins and then the LA Kings. And he was a late cut from those teams, which is no shame. I mean, being cut from Team Canada, especially best on best, there's no shame in that. But I think it was disappointing for him that he couldn't be part of that, and he wanted to be part of Hockey Canada. So he called up Hockey Canada. While all of these players are saying, no, I'm not going to go play for the Worlds, Luch is the guy calling them, and they're like, yeah, absolutely, you can play.
I just want to do a quick addendum to that. Like I said, when you brought up the idea of him signing with the Canucks.
Are you already waffling?
No. Okay. That still should not happen. In no way, shape, or form.
In no way, shape, or form.
Let that be clear. However, I like respect the hell out of the guy. The fact that he did this and the way that he talks about still loving to practice and loving competing, like it's great. There's a lot of guys that would be tapped at his
point. Why wouldn't you want that guy like that as your 13th forward?
Because I don't think it'll work. That's why. I'm not saying that he
for
might.
For league minimum.
I just don't think it'll work.
Why?
Here. Because I don't think the Canucks are in a position where that role exists on this team. I think they need to get better in so many other spots, not 13th forward, fourth line guy. I just don't see it. I don't. Okay. I don't think he has the juice or the energy to do what they need from that position on that team. That's all. It's not meant to be condemning him. I think it's great that he did this. I think it's inspirational that at his age and what he's put his body through, he still wants to go through the grind. Like, it's great. That's all.
I don't think he'd be bad for the room, personally, but I do have questions about whether or not he can still play.
Right.
I have questions about a lot of the level of the Canucks,
Many Canucks. I got one here.
Okay, go ahead.
What we learned, unsigned, so it must be from Gary or whatever his German equivalent is. The standards at Bayern Munich are next level. So on the weekend, Bayern kind of improbably won the Bundesliga. Dortmund stumbled on the final day, and that allowed Bayern Munich to capture their 11th consecutive league championship.
Okay, so that's good, right?
They celebrated by firing everybody. So they got rid of I'm going to pronounce his name wrong. I'm not even going to do it.
Just some guy.
Well, no, and Oliver Kahn. It was basically the executives. But
you can
Oliver
do it.
Kahn!
I want to hear you try it.
Wow,
now.
Rough
with
a Star Trek reference?
Yeah, I heard it on The Simpsons, I think.
Salihamidzic.
Doesn't even know what it's from.
That's good.
Hasan Salihamidzic.
It's from Star Wars, right?
Hasan Salihamidzic. And Oliver Kahn, who's a club legend. They actually got fired before the final weekend of play.
Right.
Some of the lines in this are so classically German. They're like, the first decision with Hasan went well. And then to ask to describe the conversation with Oliver, unfortunately, it didn't go so well. So here's what it sounded like when they had to deliver the news that despite winning the championship, the two executives would not be returned.
Beware. We Germans aren't all smiles and sunshine.
So even though they won the title, no, your job is still no longer.
Marty the Red, what we learned, Luton Town Stadium entry is in someone's house, and yet I'd still take it over BC Place turf as home for the Whitecaps.
I would take Kenilworth Road over BC Place for sure. It is.
Where would one of those stadiums exist in this area?
I don't know. If you were to build Kenilworth Road, you just do it right in the middle of Mount Pleasant, like in a neighborhood.
Yeah, the oldest neighborhood we got. Where's that?
Yeah, you just throw it in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And honestly, some guy's backyard also doubles as the concession stand.
Yeah, guy's leaving for work, goes out the backyard, and suddenly he's on the field.
If you look, it's in a bunch of row houses.
Hilarious.
It is amazing.
It's in a bunch of row houses.
Yeah.
I'm not joking, when you walk up the stairs, it looks like they took an old shipping container and then turned it into stairs. And then right next to it is one of those old satellite dishes that someone has affixed to their house. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a great ground.
There's a sign on it that says, "Don't touch Nigel's satellite dish."
That's right. You won't be able to watch Coronation Street if you move it.
Yeah. Announcement over the PA. Reminder to everyone, please do not touch Nigel's satellite dish.
So the interesting thing about Luton Town is because they're in the Premiership, there are certain standards that you have to meet for your stadium. And it's, you know, your seats have to be seats.
Yeah.
Like some of them don't even have like backs on the seat. I think they have to make some updates to the broadcast facility. So they got to spend $10 million or £10 million, whatever it is, 10 million. But they've got a new ground coming in a few years. Like, I don't know if shovels are in the ground yet, but there are plans for new ground.
They needed it desperately.
But they got to spend this $10 million. And, like, I guess they're going to get more money for being in the Premiership. But the question with these small clubs often is, like, do you start spending your way into problems?
Well, I mean,
look, you still have to be very careful because you have no guarantee of staying in the top five.
Nottingham Forest went up this year.
And barely stayed up.
And spent, I don't know, $200 million in transfers and literally turned over their entire squad. I think they signed 20 players. And that was to barely survive. That's what it took them because they were a team that was coming up and they weren't a big team. And they, I mean, they were previously. They were a storied club back in the day. But it's so different than here where there's an affixed spending on everything.
Right.
Every team can only spend so much.
Because didn't your Leeds, the last time they were up, they got themselves in trouble because they spent too much, right?
Yeah.
And then they dropped a bunch of divisions.
Yes. They went all the way down to League One. Which is
right.
The third division.
Very confusing.
Very confusing.
What we learned, Harry from New Westminster, if the Canucks were in the Premiership, they would have been relegated many times.
It'd be a yo-yo club.
Yeah, most recently in 2018 when they finished second to last. Colorado was the worst team.
They would be down. They would be bottom. I don't know. I don't even know what they
would be. I don't know who they'd be playing.
I don't know. They go to the Sons of Anarchy division in the American
right.
League. That's where they'd have to go, I think.
I guess.
It's too complex a thought. Relegation in North American sports. Tableside James, what we learned, hashtag WWL. Given the Monaco Grand Prix is one of F1's signature events, and the most compelling thing from the weekend was how many super yachts they packed into the marinas. And after Verstappen qualified first and cruised to a 27-second victory, how much longer can Drive to Survive continue to infuse drama in this sport that has no actual drama? I read a little bit about this theory that the actual competition of F1 has been the way that it's been, meaning not a lot of drama, and is going to continue the way it's going to be because it's kind of baked into the recipe with the top-end echelon racing teams are so rich and are so far ahead of the technology that the other ones can't afford that it's always going to be a story about who finishes 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Well, the Monaco race, too, is boring at times. The reason it was interesting, I guess, this past weekend is because it rained. So cars were sliding all over the place.
And the drama was Carlos Sainz yelling at the Ferrari team.
There's barely any straightaways either, right? Like it's not an entertaining course, really, for a viewer.
Straightaways in Monaco. It's like 100 feet.
Yeah.
But, and then you crash into a casino.
There was
Bond is, which is cool.
So I don't think that's accurate. When I was doing the prep for the show, you flip back and forth through the highlight shows on Sunday night. It's a good way to recap.
Yeah.
There was an...
That's how you do all your prep.
Most of it. In Canadian sports broadcasting history, I've never seen this much auto racing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was 25 minutes dedicated, because the Indy 500 was yesterday, too, and there was that...
Did you see that crash where the tire...
Just flew off.
I guess it barely missed the grandstand, which is the most dangerous thing about going to a race. Like the Indy 500, they've got those big fences, and there's obviously been a lot of safety measures taken.
Yeah.
But a tire can still bounce off the track, and it's funny because it wasn't tragic, but it bounced into the parking lot like a foul ball at Nat Bailey
that's
Stadium.
That's exactly what it was like.
It bounced into the parking lot, and it smoked some guy's car.
If it destroys... You should be allowed to.
Yes.
Can you imagine calling your insurance broker and be like, funny thing happened.
You're not going to believe this, but.
Oh, the old flying
I was in
tire
a car,
trick.
I was in a car accident of sorts.
There was a car involved, too, technically. Okay.
You see the Truckosaurus episode of The Simpsons? It's kind of like that.
Kirk, the unemployed cracker factory worker, wants to know, Bruff, how are you avoiding Succession spoilers?
I had to stay off social media last night, and because it's so ingrained in my habits, like, I wasn't able to, so I pick up my phone and I go right on Twitter, and all I saw was, like, people going, like, Succession, wow!
Yeah.
Please don't tell me what happened.
It was interesting.
Please.
Yeah, I did see a lot of people trying to respect the spoiler angle and be like, hey, I'm not gonna tweet out exactly what, here's a link to my podcast. There were about... I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of podcasting nerds last night that were like running to their computers like, we got Succession to talk
about. I haven't even seen the show yet. I mean, I plan to watch it because I hear it's incredible, but haven't even seen it yet.
It's always weird when people discuss scripted TV shows like it was real life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they're like, what do you think Kendall's motivation was here? It was like, well, you'd probably have to ask the writer Kendall is not a real person.
Whoever made up character, you should ask them.
But I always just find it interesting. Like, some people are just really into shows, and that's cool. I mean, we're into sports, and it's all silly, right?
Shows you how good the show is if you're that into the character, right? I mean, that's great writing.
The post-game recaps from a TV show.
Yeah.
Always struck me as kind of odd. Like, you're discussing it. It was like that with
Breaking Bad.
It.
I remember Breaking Bad was like that. Game of Thrones, to an extent, was like that.
So there's going to be some awesome sports tonight. Game 7 between the Celtics and Heat. Game 6 between Vegas and Dallas. And hopefully, for our sakes, there's going to be a Game 7 between Vegas and Dallas.
But for now, we got to go. Enjoy the night, everybody. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He's been Jason Bruff. He's been A-Dog. And he's been Laddie. This has been the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.